My message this morning is entitled Seeds, Salmon, and Stars. The last time, or actually the very first time that I gave a message on this verse, I was speaking to one of the church members afterwards about resurrection stories. And this particular person said, not to sound anti-religious or anything, but stories like this sort of creep me out. Now, that set me to thinking, what is it about stories like this one that might creep us out? Well, I actually think a good place to start would be the one line. The dead man sat up and began to speak. I would think that as far as most of us are concerned, that just isn't supposed to happen outside of TV and movies. But in the Bible, we have resurrection stories at least 10 times. And people who are supposed to be dead, people whose lives are supposed to be ended, just getting up and going back about their lives. They are stories of endings that, well, aren't actually endings. Most of us just aren't comfortable with it. It sort of creeps us out if we think about it. And neither were the people in this story who witnessed this particular resurrection. Their first reaction isn't amazement and celebration and joy. No, it creeped them out too. More specifically, the text says that after the dead man sat up and began to speak, fear seized all of them. Well, of course it did. There's a dead man talking. We probably would have had the same reaction ourselves. It's probably part of why the person told me that stories like this creep them out. Dead people are supposed to stay dead. Of course it creeped them out. In our scientific world, endings are final. When you think about it, the things that scare us, disappoint us, bother us, and sometimes offend us the most are not actually the things themselves, but rather it's partly about how those things represent endings to us. And our human instinct is to react negatively to endings. Endings just seem so final. That's why I believe that biblical resurrection stories like the one I just read are so important. Some endings, some deaths are the obvious ones. We lose loved ones, an important relationship ends, an institution that was important to us closes its doors, a building where we worked is boarded up. Beyond the sadness connected with the permanent absence in our lives, there's also the part of us that mourns the ending itself. Then there are the endings, the deaths that are less obvious to us, like when things change. We're not just upset about the new way of doing things. We are, in part, mourning the ending of the way things used to be. When we're not able to achieve a particular goal, we're not just upset about our inability to obtain this particular aspiration. We're, in part, mourning the death of the self we believed was able to achieve those goals. When you think about it, the things that scare us most, disappoint us, bother us, and sometimes offend us the most are not solely them things themselves, but also how they represent an ending to us. Our human instinct is to react negatively to endings. They just seem so final. We don't like endings, dying. We avoid them like the plague, pardon my pun. The funny thing is, death is an important part of life. The truth is, parts of each of us are dying all the time. Since I began this particular paragraph, you probably have lost about 1 million cells or so. We all lose about 100,000 cells per second. Death and dying, it would seem, we're all an important part of life. In some ways, like with our cells, it is only in dying that we live. In today's text, we see the story of life over death, of a presumed ending becoming a beginning. A widow's only son has died, a widow's only son. Much like we might feel loss at times, be they actual losses or perceived ones, this woman is utterly alone. In her day and age, the things that probably gave her some of the most meaning were being married and having a son, and they're gone. The things that gave her life are dead. At the very least, her life in terms of meaning and probably even spirituality seemed to be over. But the lesson in today's scripture isn't actually about endings. It's about beginnings. Finding new life in death. It turns out that odd reality, new beginnings and endings, is just part of how creation itself seems to function. Examples of new life through death actually surround us all the time. The truth is, when we take a really good look at creation, it's difficult to understand how we ever started believing that endings were final. One of my favorite examples of this new life and death thing is the life cycle of a salmon. Yeah, salmon. A salmon has this instinct inside of it to bring it back to its place of birth. After spending a year or two or three out in the ocean swimming thousands of miles back up the stream to their birth, the salmon prepares to die. That's right. They return to their place of birth to surrender to death. They embrace endings. Their instinct is to search it out. Even in the face of obstacles like rocks and dams and waterfalls, they do not falter in their instinctual understanding of death as an important part of living. And at the end of their long and laborious journey, they finally dig a hole, lay their eggs, and die. And out of those eggs comes new life. A new cycle begins again. You see, it is only through dying that there is new life among the salmon. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. We can see examples, like I said, through our own cells. Like I said, we all lose about 100,000 cells a second. Fortunately, in a human body, at the same time that those are dying, just as many are being reproduced. Healthy bodies remain in this constant cycle of dying cells and rebirth of new ones. Sometimes scientists actually believe that we fully regenerate all of our cells in almost 7 years. When this natural cycle of life, this dying to live pattern, is interrupted or altered, that's when we have problems. Apparently, cells that don't die off in the normal cycle are a real problem. These cells are related to diseases like cancer and become problematic because they get in the way and block the healthy development of a body. Death is an important part of life. In some ways, like with our cells, it is only in dying that we live. Now that's us. Let's turn it out to the universe itself. The universe itself is so locked into this essential cycle of life, it's difficult to believe again that we've ever began to believe that endings were final. The elements that make life possible are produced by the death of a star. How much more proof do we need that endings are not bad? How much more proof could we need that new life from death is just the way that this thing we call life works? Endings aren't as bad as we have been led to believe. They are possibly the opposite of bad. They are essential. Endings are not the death of something. They're simply the markers to the beginnings of new possibilities, of new life. In today's scripture reading, we have one of the most extreme biblical examples that endings are not final. It's actually interesting to consider that there are only two sacraments in the Presbyterian Church. Anybody know what they are, two sacraments in the Presbyterian Church? Baptism and communion. Both of them are sacraments centered on the very idea that new life comes from death. In communion, we celebrate the resurrection, a reminder that because of God's love, there is life after death. And in baptism, we die to our old life And as we cross through the waters of baptism, the old life is gone, we say, the new life has begun. You see, today's scripture is not just about the way that the widow's son was brought back to life, about how he got his physical life back. It's also not just about how, in getting him back, she got her spiritual life back. It is also about our spiritual and emotional lives, that they're not always as they should be until we die to what we once knew and live into a new and healthier understanding. Part of what a story like this should make us consider is, if we want to continue growing in our relationship with God, we have to see the importance of dying in order to live. Not just the reality of this death life cycle that's imprinted into even the furthest reaches and the furthest corners of creation, but the reality of the spiritual and emotional deaths we all must die every day. Dying to ourselves, finding new understanding, and new beginnings with which to move forward in healthier spiritual ways. A very important part of that is trusting that new beginnings are always on the other side of endings, the other sides of deaths. Be they physical, emotional, or spiritual endings, we must trust that they're not final. Trust that there is a way. Trust that nothing in this life, not angels, not rulers, not things present, things to be, not powers, nor heights, nor depths, can separate us from the love of God and the new beginnings found in that love. If we do that, if we can truly trust that, even when we're facing physical and emotional and spiritual endings, if we can trust that so much that facing endings does not cause us to fear, if we can do that, then we can really begin living our lives. It's a difficult lesson, but if we can learn it, if we can live it, if we can trust fully into it, even in the face of death, then the impacts of endings might not creep us out, scare us, disappoint us, bother us, and sometimes offend us. We don't like endings. We don't like them. We actually do avoid them just as much as we possibly can. The funny thing is, death is an important part of life. Jesus once said, unless a seed dies, it remains only a seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds and small seedlings of love, which will then grow with a great love. Saint Francis of Assisi knew this law of life well when he wrote his prayer of peace. It is in giving that we receive. It is in dying that we are born again. The Apostle Paul knew it well when he said, we will not be united with Christ in a resurrection like His unless we are first united with Christ in a death like His. I'd like to conclude with this riddle. What does a human cell, a seed, a salmon, a star, and our lives have in common? If you can understand the answer to that riddle, you have the key to growing your life and your relationship with God even deeper.